I know. Yep. We were working off an old list.
No, okay,
your
so
name,
maybe not.
And I remembered at the. Let me just see if I remember to make you one or not. You can just take a.
Actually, I was going to say, do you want to pass this to Dave?
If you, yeah, right, yeah. Yes. Why don't I just give you
okay.
this?
Okay, no, that's perfect. Yep.
Yeah, I guess maybe I didn't make you one. Okay.
Perfect, yep.
Great, thanks. Okay.
Volunteer job is to go to congregations and coach process. I work very closely with the search committees when they're formed. I mean, my initial contacts are generally with the standing committees or governing boards, and then I work very closely with the search committees as they go through and get ready to do this important work. I was nominated by the district executive, Sue Phillips. I was appointed by Keith Cron, the director of transition. So I work directly for the UUN. There's this, you know, collaborative relationship between the district and the organization. I get an honorarium for the work I do. In your case, your congregation has provided me with this official speaker's fee. But otherwise, you guys don't pay for these coaching services. They come out of your congregations as a fair share congregation. All the rest of this, I'm free of charge. So feel free to don't worry about picking the phone or writing an email. You won't get a bill. My travel expenses are also reimbursed by the UUA. So don't worry, I won't have to be hitching a ride to get home. I will meet with you three times. This is the first time. And the second time will be in person with your search committee once they are in panel or chosen or whatever verb you'd like to attach to that. And they're ideally at their retreat. So we've got a lot of good time to bond and to get down to the heart of this process. Because this is, above all, a process. I participate as part of my training in the used to be annual training for the coaches, the NSRs, college or NSRs. Now it's more like every couple of years. Whenever they have a training, I go. I'm always available to the board president and search committee by email and phone, and again, I'm available to you by email as well. Why am I a ministerial summit representative? Because I love congregations. And in congregations, this is right where everything happens. If our congregations are strong, our faith is strong. If our congregations are weak, then there isn't really much point in having faith, because this is where it all comes to life. And I also believe in the real importance of a good, strong, congregational, ministerial relationship. It's a partnership. Everybody's got to show up. Everybody's got to bring themselves to the table fully. And each person, each half of that partnership needs to respect what the other half does. And you guys, if you're three-quarter type of professional ministry, you will understand that, obviously. The settlement handbook you'll find here at this website. My mentor would say, the settlement handbook is not reinventing the wheel. You are autonomous. You can call any person you want to call, anybody you want as your minister. But the transitions office does for sure that you're getting a minister that you think you're getting with all the proper background checks and, you know, protections if you limit yourself to the UUA pool, the UUA certain process. So you can call absolutely anyone. A guy you just met on the street, if that's what you want to do. If you do that, obviously the UUA can't offer you any protections, and I really can't do that much service. The outline procedure that you can read in the settlement handbook is the result of many, many years of experience, and it is constantly being adapted and fine tweaked here and there to make it more current and to take advantage of what we learn as we go through these processes again and again and again. It is the Bible, and it is also the process that UU ministers in fellowship with UUA, they have pledged to abide by this process. So if you abide by the process outlined in the settlement handbook, you won't find yourself in any trouble with any of our fellowship ministers, you know, expecting you to behave otherwise or do something different. You'll be in good shape. It is a good process. It's a good process that allows for real respect and the appropriate levels of confidentiality for both parties. And its purpose is to bring about the best possible match between congregation and minister. You could read this and decide you want to create your own search process, and maybe it would be better, maybe it wouldn't. You can read this and follow every step of the way. It doesn't mean you couldn't make a mistake, it couldn't go wrong. But if you follow this with insight and wisdom, the chances are very, very good you'll be just fine. I want you all to know the basics of what's going to happen, and so I'm going to outline this whole procedure in six steps, and these six steps are a little bit hard to follow. My friends is here for the first step, and I want to remind you that ours is a democratic faith. Without bishops and superintendents, that you guys get to decide how you want to do this. So the entire congregation is
going to be very involved in selecting your next minister. The second step is the congregation and or the board hold one or more meetings to approve the financing of the search process, to approve compensation for the new minister, and to select a search committee. And you guys may be in different, you know, I'm not exactly sure, I'm going to meet your board later, I'm not exactly sure where you're along that continuum, but I have great confidence that they do keep it posted and advised. There is a search budget. For those of you who've been involved in searches in the past or in your profession, you know that a search isn't cheap. This one will probably cost you somewhere between $8,000 and $10,000. That's for all of the attendant housing potential candidates, flying them either. They're not all necessarily going to come from, you know, right next door. And probably not having to send your search committee members other places. That's the good news. If you were in some other geographic area, you might have to put that up. So that, you know, you're lucky. That shouldn't be as expensive. But the bad news is in some places really darn expensive. So, you know, don't expect to get out of this real cheap. You can also probably spread this budget over 2 years. You don't have to be thinking, oh my lord, in the next year we have to have this one big budget. Compensation. The board bears responsibility for recommending compensation for your next minister. We have a district compensation consultant who can assist the board in thinking through its compensation plans for your entire church staff, including this. You'll have a search committee. This is one of those times when the results of the committee's work are absolutely directly linked to the quality of the people who are on it. This is not the time to make a disaffected member of your congregation feel good by putting him or her on the search committee. They should not be chosen to advocate for one particular program or for any narrow slice of church life. They should be people who have a really deep and broad understanding of your congregation as a whole. You don't want someone with an axe grind, not at all. So you would use all of your wisdom to elect 5 or 7 people who love and care for this congregation. Serving on a search committee is a very rewarding task that requires a lot of time and a lot of effort. Anyone you elect should resign from everything else except participating in the choir and, of course, frequent Sunday morning attendance. So keep singing. Showing up to church, but expect that if you're on the search committee that your other volunteer obligations are going to have to take a back seat. So, fairness plus loyalty plus the time to give, these will serve you well. The process, there's a recommendation that the nominating committee or the board request nominations or self-nominations or some other way to make sure that the selection of that search committee is as open as possible so that you all have good input in. Now, this is where the steps are a little bit hard to follow. The third step, search committee. They have to get to know each other. So if we're at the point now, you have a search committee. So the first step, of the search committee is that you've got to get to know each other really well, really deeply. They need to know you, your preferences, your hopes, your dreams, and they so that they can be intelligent and wise brokers and matchmakers for this next step. Their first thing to do in getting to know one another really well is to go on a retreat together, preferably overnight, off-site. This should be part of the budgeting that you do. And some congregations are fortunate enough to have a member with a house that's big enough to hold 5 to 7 people. They can go away and bond and really get down to it. They have to be intimate. They have to be deeply enough acquainted that they can reliably disagree civilly, comfortably express their points of view, and comfortably come to a process within their group that enables them to negotiate their own disagreements. They have got to be able to be candid with each other and compassionate with each other. And we suggest that you have a facilitator who actually put the bill for an active, a professional facilitator to go with them. I go on the retreats as well, but I prefer to have a facilitator. I do the MSR2 at these retreats, but I prefer to have someone who's a really good group facilitator help with that bonding process. I'm sorry, yes. Standing about MSR2, fine. This is the MSR1. This is the Ministerial Settlement Representative 1 meeting. This is my first. The MSR2, the second one, is with had this, they bonded. After the facilitator has done their work, ideally on day two of the retreat, I go in and give them that. Then the search committee is going to come back, and they're going to employ a variety of methods to get to the heart of who you are, help you unlock this, help you enter this process in a meaningful way. They might use surveys to judge your attitudes, feelings, preferences. They might use meetings and focus groups, cottage meetings, and they are also going to suggest, or I'm going to strongly suggest, that you all attend what's called Beyond Categorical Thinking, a workshop designed to open our minds a little bit about assumptions we might hold about the next minister, about people's attitudes and attributes. We often flatter ourselves that, oh, we don't worry, we don't have any problem with that. We don't have any problem with that. And yet, in the next breath, I can hear, I have heard Congress say, we want a person of color because we'd like to be more diverse. Or we want, I have heard, we want someone who's married, someone with children, because we want to increase families. These are all examples of categorical thinking that might not feel particularly bigoted, but they are nevertheless imputing to your potential partner attributes based solely on exterior qualities, and that is neither clear to them nor wise. Someone who's a parent with children might not be at all gifted in bringing children and bringing families, and someone who's not a parent might be a whiz bang at it. So, you get the point. The search committee, then, after they've done their work and they've surveyed you and they feel like they know who you are, then they publish, in effect, an open offer. This offer describes the congregation, your history, your current circumstances, and the hopes you have for the future, and the expectations you have for your next minister. This goes up on the website. They also create a congregational record. This is a short form. Also goes up on the Transitions Office webpage. And this can be read by every minister who has even a passing interest in serving your congregation. That's the shorter version. Eventually, pretty soon thereafter, your search committee will need to create what's known as the congregational packet. Those of you who've served on search committees before know all about it. Oh, yes. Those used to be beautiful, glossies, hard copies. Nowadays, they're almost all electronic. I haven't seen a concrete one in ages. So yeah, phew. Good news, bad news. Postage, not so much a problem. You might need to hire a web designer. You know, you've got to think about, So that congregational packet, that's not exchanged until your search committee and the potential applicant have decided that they want to delve a little more deeply. They want to learn a little more about each other. And it's designed to be a simultaneous exchange. It's not a, you show me yours, I'll decide if I like it, then I'll show you mine. No, it's an actual swap right then and there.
So is this for a short list of people then?
The congregational packet? Yeah, it should be. It should be a much shorter list. The records, the ministerial records, the congregational records, they can be just looked at willy-nilly. But the packets, yeah, now we're starting to winnow it down here. And it's reciprocal. So each is starting to winnow their choices. The search committee, shortly after, not right at the same moment that they get your congregational packet, the bigger, more expansive view of you, published, within a couple of weeks, it's a little frustrating. The search committee, they get all this work done, and it's an enormous amount of work. Have I said, it's an enormous amount of work. They're pretty eager. They want to just see, because they know ministers can see them. But they cannot, the search committee cannot see ministerial records for a couple of weeks. They do see a couple of weeks after the congregational record is done. We have to do another MSR, the third MSR by phone this time, another conference, telephone conference with the search committee, make sure they're really prepared for all of the confidentiality requirements, all of the checklists, safeguards, neutral pulpit arrangements. They really are clear that what their process is going to be and how they're going to communicate with these potential applicants. Because it's true in all of life, you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. So we want to be sure that they're really ready to make that first impression. But once that happens, then they get to look at the ministerial record of every single eligible, interested minister. There's no editing. The UUA, the Transitions Office, does not
there are usually 50 to 70 congregations in search at any given time, any given year. 50 to 70. I know. There are usually, here's the good news, usually 2 or 3 times that many ministers who are looking for placement. So, phew. And the other thing that you've got going for you is that you are in the Massachusetts district. And New England is very attractive. I mean, why wouldn't it be? Of course it's attractive. We know that. So, that's a really good thing. That's really good. You will get a lot of looks. You'll get plenty of looks. That's not going to be a concern for you.
So is this nationwide, the pool we're looking at?
Yes.
Okay.
And vice versa. It is every ministering fellowship. Let's see. There can be everyone looking at your records from the newest theological school graduate to a minister who's been serving 20 or 30 years. The search committee, just as the UA is free to say to a minister that hasn't maybe looked at the transitions web page or hasn't thought about submitting your application or moving or changing, just as the transitions office might say, hey, Joe, take a look at these guys, so can the search committee say, you know, we saw so-and-so, we would really like to encourage them to go to the transitions website and enter the process. So the search committee does not directly talk to a minister and directly urge them to enter the process. By doing so, they're not bypassing the process because they're asking them to enter the process, so all the safeguards are in place. But it means your search committee has a lot of liberty to investigate. If you know someone with a hot ticket, just as he's in the hall, yeah, then you know, you should by all means feel empowered if your search committee decides to do that. Your search committee should feel empowered to approach them and say, hey, take a look at us and take a look at the process. The search committee, once it's winnowed, and now we're down to a handful, all right, of possible applicants, the search committee spends a weekend apiece with the top 3 or 4 pre-candidates under consideration. This happens, without me, I'm not there. This happens also without you. So, this is really part of the point of having a search committee. We cannot have entire congregations aware of who the applicants are. Some of these people are in congregations who have no idea that they're searching. There are a variety of considerations. Most of all, is the reason you entrust this work to a body who's so trusted and so represented so that you don't, as a congregation, begin to divide into factions and have, you know, votes for, I like that one, I like that one. That's kind of what we're hoping to avoid, factioning. Not really so helpful to you all. If any of you who is not on the search committee at any time gets wind of information you know you really shouldn't have, if you have gotten wise to someone preaching in a neutral pulpit next door or so, and it's obvious to you that this is one of your pre-candidates, go to someone on the search committee and tell them that this is what you've heard. Don't ask them to confirm it, but tell them this is what you've heard, and then tell no one else. I beg you, for the good of your congregation, for the good of your neighboring congregations, this is really, really serious stuff, and so we have to all be on our honor. The search committee should absolutely keep you informed of what's going on as much as they are able. Obviously, they can't tell you who, but they are perfectly able to tell you we're at this stage in the process, and we have, you know, good applicants. We're feeling really good about this. They should keep you apprised as the search process unfolds. We're almost through this. The search committee then asks the minister out of that top 3 or 4, they ask the person they think in their best estimation would be their preferred match. Now we tell search committees, please, when you're thinking of these top 3 or 4, rather than thinking of them as best, second best, third best, worst, think of them as really alternatives, because that's honestly what they will be. They're going to be different directions. It's more like east, west, north, and south. I mean, you can't really say. I mean, a lot of people in New England think the South is terrible, but I said enough time ago, it's not. So you can't really say that one direction is infinitely preferable. So if your search committee can be persuaded to think in those terms, these are alternative ways your congregation can move and grow.
election and said, you know, sorry, I've already, they can move to their second without feeling like, oh, second best, you know? So if you can, and it may seem, I don't know if it seems false or phony to you, but it's actually real. It's actually real. I don't know how to say it any better. Then, once you have a match, once one of these three or four candidates is like, yes, then they are brought here for candidate week. 7 to 10 days, they preach. This is it. You don't get to look at the variety of three or four. This is the person that your search committee has said, this is who we think is our marriage. This is it. And you get to see, is this a good match? It is really important. The congregation's role in this discernment is certainly vital. Most ministerial applicants are told by the transitions office to never, ever, ever, ever accept a call of less than 90%. Because this is your honeymoon period. You're kind of in. And now, it's not going to get better. And many of them will not accept a call of any less than 95%. So there's a very high degree of unanimity that needs to be present. And that's healthy. That's good. That's appropriate. Something I want you to keep in mind, if I can persuade you at all to do this. There really is no such thing as a failed search. If your search committee, it's just like, can you imagine sending one of your sons or daughters off to college, just because, you know, in the old days, a lot of us used to get married out of college, could you imagine saying to them, hurry up, pick the right person right then, and if you don't, you know, it could be a lot harder, so choose Mr. or Ms. right now. You would never say that to your kids. And it's the same for your search committee. It's, you know, it's kind of random who happens to be on the market at the moment that you're searching. And so if at the end of this process, your search committee either has not made a match, the people that they thought kind of didn't reciprocate, that's not a huge big deal. It's sad. It's hard for a congregation. It's very hard. Everybody's excited. They want to move forward. But it's not the end of the world. It can be just not the right one yet. And if I can persuade you to kind of hold that in your hearts. The only truly failed search is if your search committee gets desperate, pick someone who they're, you know, afraid they need to have a name, you guys sort of sweep it through because you don't want to have to deal with this anymore. Now you're married to someone you don't really love. That's bad. That's really bad. So that's the only possible bad result in this process. Yes. Is there a question? Yes.
Candidate for interim ministry preaches is not in this pulpit itself, it's in a neutral pulpit nearby.
Exactly.
If I'm correct.
You are absolutely correct. That's right. And so part of the search committee's job, and they divide up, they have among on the search committee, they usually have, you know, they specialize each of them, so no one person is trying to do it all. And one of the jobs is to line up neutral pulpits within reasonable traveling distance, but it won't be just a dead giveaway to all of you. And it's harder because, as one of my friends, you can't swing a dead cat around here without hitting a UU church. So it's really hard. I don't know why she's swinging dead cats, but it's really hard. It's hard not to notice. And, for example, this morning, I was at the UU church in Jamaica Plain because I didn't follow my directions well. So I know how close we all are. So a study of obliviousness to the goings-on and pulpits around here served you very well.
Yes. My recollection from the last time we searched was that the search committee listened to several people search, not just one. Several people do sermons. So not
yes.
Not the congregation.
Yes.
But not the congregation.
Exactly. That's exactly right. The search committee.
When the candidate comes, they do preach.
That's right. Okay. When the candidate comes, once they, the search committee has their three or four top, and they go and see them at neutral pulpits, right. And then they have to do a really heavy-duty discernment among them to settle on who's the first person we're going to send an offer to. And then that person, once there's a match, once that's reciprocated, then that person actually comes here and preaches, because it's important that you all be, it's more important you all be in love, and that your church community be in love, and hopefully they're the same thing, but it's vitally important.
It also leads to subgroups during that
yes.
time.
Yes, yeah. It's intense. That candidate is intense, yes. Yes.
Does that person usually preach once or twice?
You know, I think once.
Once.
Yeah, I think once. Good. I do
everybody, whoever wants to meet with them in private or host to community meetings and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and they, it's
Do they sometimes preach this Sunday at both ends?
I don't think so. I don't know. I think that's something your search committee would work out with them. And you know, depending upon their level of stamina. I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure about that, but I can find out. Yes.
And does this take place in the spring? Is that where timing-wise?
Yes, timing-wise, that's exactly this. What, you're on track to begin the discernment process for the search committee. The search committee should be in panel certainly by June. We should know who they are. And then we should be making plans to retreat, you know, right away this summer. And then when they come back, I don't know about your congregation, but many congregations, nothing happens in the summer. Is that you're like everybody else. Okay, so when they come back in September, they've got to get the ground running with surveys, all those things. So you guys need to be ready to participate. You can't sit back and go, well, you know, come November, I'll give my two. That's too late. And so they're getting all that stuff done and underway, so they get all these things posted, so they get all this, and that means by January to March, they're meeting the three candidates. March 15th, I think, is the offer date. That's when the earliest they can actually submit an offer to their preferred candidate. You might not hear about it yet because there's some things that go on. One other thing, no candidate comes to your congregation. Your candidate doesn't come here until the search committee and the compensation committee have worked out all the details. That we do not want a situation where you're kind of in love, but oh, there's this one little fire over a barrel. No. So, you know, that's part of what happens in March 15th that when you meet them. Yes?
What happens if life happens? What happens if somebody on the search committee has a life event that calls them to move off the committee?
Excellent question. Thank you so much. It depends very much on when and where the process happens. If someone who is called to serve on the search committee has to leave before the retreat, then it's okay to have an alternate step in after the retreat, because the chemistry and the dynamics are absolutely critical, then you're generally better off not replacing them and just carrying on with the people that have them.
Do they have an potential alternate go to the retreat?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know, because I think the retreat is really the bonding, and it's kind of for real. And so I'm not sure, and you know, it might seem silly, but having just one more person in the room affects the dynamics.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say no. Like, really, I would treat the retreat as the retreat as the cutoff. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Does it ever happen that a very attractive candidate becomes the top candidate at the same time for several congregations?
Never.
Does the search committee at each of these congregations know the facts about the situation?
No, they don't. And this is a moment where it's another reason why it's a really good idea not to think of your 1, 2, 3, and 4s as best, you know, less good, least good. Because that absolutely happens. And they don't find out until they go to exchange offers. Since everybody's exchanging offers kind of at the same time, they don't find out about this until then. And now sometimes candidates, or pre-candidates, I should say, will take themselves out of consideration earlier if they know, for whatever reason. And I know of some who said, you know what, I just don't want to be in such a suburban community. That's happened. I know that's happened. So now the number of pre-candidates is down to 2 or 3. That's not a problem. But, well, that's really a problem. But so, yeah, if you're right to the moment of extending the offer and say your remaining 3, they each accept offers elsewhere, that can happen. And in that case, then it's back to what I urge you to hold in mind. It just means you haven't found Mr. or Ms. Right yet, because it's got to be a reciprocal thing, yes.
But the church is free to request another list.
Yes.
Please get the.
That's right. There is a second round that happens at that point, and second rounds need to be approached with great caution. Because of our natural tendency to be a little bit nervous and a little bit prone to settle for, you know, it's pretty good, good enough, let's get this stuff. So churches are, and church committees are advised to be very careful. But there is, in fact,
then your search committee has some work to do with you to determine whether you want the same search committee to continue for the next 6 months. Searches are now on 6 month increments. You can start and begin a search 2 times a year as opposed to once a year. So your search committee could simply enter the next 6 month process. If you felt, as a congregation, the search committee, you didn't trust them anymore, then, you know, you have some work to do amongst yourself. Do we need to reconstitute this or not? No one but you can answer that question. But that's how it would unfold. Thank you.
The transition minister, I love the retreat we had earlier. There was some talk about either a one-year contract or a two-year.
Right.
How do you know about that?
If you don't match, then there are a couple of choices in front of you. And I don't know the identity of your interim minister yet, neither do you, right? You just got that off. Okay, so I do know that sometimes interim ministers are available and willing, and congregations want them to serve another term, whatever that is. So it's not a huge deal. And then some congregations want to switch to a new interim. That's also a possibility.
We've already voted on the standing committee to have a second year if necessary.
Right. I understood the question to be about the mechanics, like how does that happen? Does it have to be, it doesn't have to be the same interim, it can be the same interim, and that's very much a function of them and you.
And we use very careful language, so it would be sort of a discernment process at that time.
Which is very wise. You're not hiring a field.
And the interim minister can, is forbidden to them to be our permanent minister?
Yes, they are. And that's a really good thing. Because it's very specific work. Forbidden is strong. If they define a convention, then I think, I'm not sure if it's them or your congregation that is, you know, you just can't use the settlement process or some such thing. I'm not sure what the penalties are, but yes, they're supposed to be, they're supposed to come pre-fired. They have and that's a really good thing. If you think about it, that's a really good thing. You wouldn't want to mess that up. And it's hard for me, because I know we have an interim minister, Elaine Parasula. I love her. Oh my, if we could do, I think, oh, you know, but I remember part of the reason I love her is she's actually fearless. During the pot. Part of the reason he's actually fearless is during the pot is, hey, she's leaving. So, you know, you might shoot yourself in the foot if you circumvent that. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
Is it? Have you known congregations where they brought someone in for candidating week and then that didn't work out and they actually succeeded in bringing someone in? Second person for candidating week if during the same search process?
No, I don't know of that happening. Where I've seen the second round happen is where there has been no candidate. You know, for one reason or another, there's not been a reciprocal match. Once you come to candidating week and that doesn't work, then I think almost always you have some serious soul searching to do. Does this search committee reflect us? What went wrong here? And when I say wrong, I mean, you know, where's the disconnect?
But what if the congregation loved the person?
Oh.
But the person turned the church.
Exactly. Well, that's part of your discernment.
No, but that would be a place where another candidate might be able to come.
Yeah, I just don't. You know, I can find out whether the mechanics allow
that.
Because
that means the committee and the congregation were on the same page.
Exactly.
Correct. Supposing North had come and North said no. Is there a kind of
West?
Talk to Lily or heard the exit interview.
guys are great. We just need to, you know, move this forward. But I can find out what happens if that's ever happened. Yes?
So the confidentiality only is for us. We're not supposed to, we're the ones with the blinders on. Anybody else out there can talk to this person as a candidate.
Let me make sure I'm understanding.
In other words, when they approach Lily, who isn't here anymore, the UA can say what they want. That
absolutely.
So we're the only ones that have to keep our eyes closed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not easy. Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Will we know officially through you what other churches are searching in the same season?
You will, actually. I do know right now, this is very busy. Very busy time for the Mascot District. There are a number of congregations in search. What's hard for congregations to believe is that each is truly unique. You actually do occupy your own niches. You're not in direct competition with each other.
We know that. It's unique.
Yeah. How come more people don't have that evidence system, right? One of the best resources, one of the best resources are going to be those to our colleagues who will know these candidates and they'll be candid. Their interest, the UA's interest, is in having a good match. Not just trying to get rid of somebody who said no, they won't. No, I could make a joke, but I won't. Yes.
When we hire a school superintendent, or I'm an engineer, we hire an engineer, political, social, personal, off the table. Like, you can't engage in that. You try to stay away from, even like someone drops a little word about a baseball team, you try not to say, do you like the Red Sox?
Yeah.
What's the guy with the minister? It's sort of hard because you almost want to know, like, you know, what's your preference? Do you like
the Red Sox?
The Red Sox.
Yeah. The search committee is giving some good resources, some good guides. And, you know, that's a really good question. I think that part of the reason you want to choose people who are wise is that you'll want to trust them to feel their way through that. Because you absolutely want to know who someone really is, what they love, who they love, what they believe in. It's your prerogative to know that. You need to know that before you marry them. But at the same time, they have to be sensible about not making assumptions about, you know, how would you feel about a diehard Republican minister? You know? I can usually talk that one out and say
so basically, the federal labor laws apply.
That's a really good question. I'm not sure because we're a church, and you know, I know I should know this, but I don't.
In other words, when I hire people, it's like I can't get close to their marital status or their sexual orientation or any of those things you're not
I'm not sure if that's my question. That's a really good question. I'll find out because I should know that. You're definitely going to have
a statement. They write a very exhaustive statement of who they are and what they believe in.
And you're going to want to know if there's family so that you can point them in the direction of, you know, resources. Your search committee is going to need to help them feel comfortable in your community, which means knowing all the resources they could potentially want. So I tend to think that the federal labor laws do not explicitly apply because, well, we're a church. But I will find out so that your search committee does not wander into a negative. Anybody else? So right now, I think I'm tracking down whether the federal labor laws apply and what happens if a candidate, after being introduced to the congregation, says, yet, and do you get what happens? Just what happens? Does that ever happen? Okay.
I have a quick question about the second round you're talking about.
Yes.
So that's when you don't actually get a candidate from your four. And then there's a second round. Does that mean you go out, the search committee goes out, and you need another three or four, and chooses one? What's involved in the second round?
Here's what I know about it. I know that people who, search committees close their list at some point. When they have their initial three or four, they often stop taking other interested parties because it's not at all cool to bump someone off your list and say, oh, you know what, something better came along. That's just not right. And so they close their list sometimes early. Not too early, but they've gotten their three or four. They feel good. Well, if those three or four, none of them pan out, then they ask the transitions office to reopen their list to encourage all the people who had wanted to apply to do so, so they can take a look. And now it's up to the search committees whether they want to look at people they had previously looked at and said, no, I don't think so. We don't want to go. Don't want to go Southwest. So they can do that or decide they only want to see new people. That's really all I know about that part of the process. Whether they, you know, have a little truncated mini, I don't know what happens. I can find out. Yes.
Are you familiar with compensation of ministers?
That is not my first thing. I'm pleased to tell you, but just because going to be sending him an email saying, I've met a few guys, and he should be looking forward to an email. So he comes out and meets with your governing board and or search committee.
He will come?
He will. He will come. He won't talk to the congregation so much. He'll talk to the governing board and the search committee to help them develop a reasonable budget. And because it matters, obviously, what you offer, it matters. And he can give you good advice. For example, I have since learned that if you can only afford, you know, X number of dollars plus benefits, but if you think, well, maybe if we cut the benefits off and we can do X plus $5, let's say no. Offer less compensation. Be sure you offer the benefit. He can give you good feedback and good guidance about that. Yes.
How does the compensation issue align with the choice of the top candidate and candidate's visit? So, I mean, is there a negotiation stage about compensation after that?
Good.
Matchmaking goes off.
Yeah. No. The compensation. The expected range of compensation is something your search committee will have to know and publish early so that the potential candidates are not coming in blind. What, you people are going to give me $5,000 a year? Are you kidding me? So they're not the answer that your search committee will publish with the offer a range. And the range is intended to take into account, you know, various levels of experience, years of experience, that kind of thing, or just how much in love you are. But this is the range. And these are the sort of general benefits. This is important for a couple reasons. One, for your potential applicants, and two, so that your congregation can earn its non-asterisk. Because if you publish an offer without adequate benefits, you'll get a little asterisk by your congregation. You don't want that.
I guess if I could follow up, I can imagine a situation where the candidate might say, well, the offer's in the right ballpark, but now my partner or spouse has to land on his or her feet.
Yeah.
And I've got to look at housing prices and all of those things. So
yeah.
There would be a period, an adequate period for the candidate to kind of look into those things.
These are the negotiations that take place before it's accepted. I mean, these are the kinds of back and forth before they come to meet the congregation. That's all got to be in the rear view mirror before they come before you. Okay? Yes.
Christina, can I stand up for the congregation, please? Okay.
As you all know, we're currently in our pledge process.
Oh.
Right? And but we're talking about you're pledging for the fiscal year that has the surge. It doesn't have any of the compensation for the new minister. But what I want you all to think about in your pledges now is how much you will be able to give the following year. Because what's going to happen is this whole compensation thing, and rest assured, this is a parenthetical remark, when we do our compensation, we divvy things up between their salary, their housing allowance, their required to have a disability policy, their a retirement policy, some professional expenses. So that's all taken care of. How it gets divvied up will be with the standing committee. But truly, we are not going to have a time to vote again on the next year's budget until after the ministerial compensation is set. So we're really going to be looking at, you know, what's our budget this year for FY13, and then what can we project for FY14. So I encourage you all to be as generous as you can. $7,500 for the search.
new money. Now, we have a couple places that we are can ship some things around. For instance, Finance Committee is going to give up some expense money that we had this year. So the $7,500 isn't totally new, except that at the same time, we want to give our increases for the staff, for the administrator, and for the music director. And then we have to hire the other two staff. So for the most part, the answer is yes. Okay. It's new money on top of what we had for this year.
When we hire a new minister and the budget that will come out in the first year, will that require a substantial increase in the total budget that year?
If there were extra funds that year, okay, if we felt confident that we were going to have extra money, it would probably give us, maybe it would give us some flexibility with the minister, even though we will have announced what the compensation package is earlier.
I guess my real question is the compensation package that we pay right now to Lily versus the compensation package that we will pay to our next minister. Is the differential so large that we need to be thinking about that now in terms of pledges and what are drawing us?
I'd say the answer is yes. It would give us a little extra. Well, I think Dave Lovely and I were, when we're looking at the things, we were really, what UUA does is it gives us a compensation range that they consider appropriate for each geographic kind of community you live in, okay? And there's a low, middle, and high. And we've really been talking with the money we have available at being at the low end, but within the range for the interim. And it would be nicer to be, obviously, a little closer to the midpoint.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
I would like to just bring this conversation to a little bit of a close. We honor our time together today. Laura is going to meet with standing committee afterwards, so I know she'll be around for a few minutes afterwards, and she's obviously got her contact information. I would also really welcome additional questions to us, which we can always get to Laura if we need to, and a couple of points. I hope that you guys have seen some of our updates that have gone out through the e-news, and that seems to be the best way to communicate with our large and unwieldy group. So we're trying, when there is information to report, boom, there it is. And every couple of weeks or so, there's another update. The other thing that I just want to say is, first of all, thank you. It's a lot of technical information, and yet within all of the technical information is an enormous amount of nuance. And that really came across to me today. And what also came across to me today is just how subtle, nuanced, big the role is of the search committee. So please, time is still open to consider applying. And I really, really would encourage you, as you continue to discern this process, your relationship with the church, your time, etc. We put together an application only as sort of to keep things, on the same page, give everybody the same opportunity, so it didn't become a who knows who and favoritism thing. If it feels daunting and you don't want to fill out all those pages, talk to one, talk to Deb, talk to Tori, talk to Carol, who are recruiting for the search committee. You're always welcome to talk to any of us on the standing committee. But as we clearly see, even more than we saw before, it is just such an important role. So please do give it some time and attention. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
members grab a chair and go into the back room, please? Thank you.
No.
Sure.